Hi everyone, welcome to the Permission to Become podcast. This is a podcast about Asian American women exploring their boundaries and permissions around self-discovery and personal empowerment. In this podcast, we will dive into the untold tales of Asian American women breaking out of who they should be and becoming who they truly are. My name is Joyce Bao, and I'm your host on this podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the Permission to Become podcast. If you like what you've heard, don't forget to rate, review, or subscribe to this podcast and share it with a friend. I'd really appreciate it. I'd also love to hear any feedback you have, so feel free to email me at permissiontobecome@gmail.com. Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Permission to Become podcast for another episode today. I'd like to introduce to you our guest on today's episode, Erin Lim. Erin is a coach, a teacher, and a storyteller who inquires, explores, and holds space for others unfolding. She is driven by her curiosity to understand consciousness, people, and the world, so that we can take care of each other collectively as a community. And she really hopes to make the world brighter by deepening our presence and elevating our well-being through her coaching, teaching, and authentic storytelling. So hi, Erin, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining. Well, I would love for you to give a little bit of intro to our audience about just who you are and what's something that is most alive for you right now.
What is most alive for me right now is this curiosity, because the question of who are you is so big. I respond that at the level of my identities that I wear to operate in the world, such as coach, teacher at Hoffman, or a writer, or do I share the experience that is alive right now? Or maybe I get to share like some of my history of what I believe in, the stories that I tell myself that I believe in that have shaped who I am today. But just conventionally, if I were to introduce myself, my name is Erin, and I am an integral coach and am a teacher at Hoffman. Through my life's experience, I believe that my mission is to serve in this lifetime. And the way that that gets manifested are three different ways. So the way that I think about it is there's 1-to-1, which is usually coaching, my one-on-one coaching with my client. And there's 1-to-some. So I work at an institute called Hoffman Process. It's a 1 week long. We provide experiences for personal transformation. And there I get to work with a group of students at times. And I'm a writer. So that's a 1-to-many of how I service the world, where I get to share my thoughts, and whoever feel called to read my writing, hopefully get inspired or see themselves and become more courageous.
I love your response to my question of, you know, who are you? And your answer really speaks to just the different facets of our identities and the exploration that you have done to really examine this question. So I definitely want to dig in to explore this further. And because this podcast is, I want to showcase stories of Asian American women on their path of becoming. I love to hear a little bit about your own story and how you relate to the identity as an Asian American woman. So you grew up in Korea and you moved to the U.S. to attend university. And in fact, attend one of the most prestigious universities in the US, Brown. I'm curious, how did your role as an Asian, as an Asian woman, growing up in Korea, really shaped who you were becoming early in your life?
I usually have this, the way that I think how being woman and being Asian have influenced me is obviously through, the earliest memory is through my family constellation. Both of my parents worked. So my mom's mother, my maternal grandmother, used to take care of me and my younger brother. And because I'm the girl, she would play this favoritism towards my younger brother by giving her the better parts of the meat and giving him a thicker red envelope during the holiday season because he was male. So a lot of ways that I have rebelled against that growing up was just speaking up even louder. And I still remember my grandmother yelling at me saying that I should be quiet because I'm a woman. And in response, I rebelled against it. But for a long time, I would have these two contradictory voices in my head. One is the voice from my grandmother saying, as a woman, you should be quiet and more submissive. But then there's also this other side of me that was rebelling against that voice, that fuck that. I'm going to say whatever I want to say and weigh whatever I want to do. So this having two conflicting voices in my head was quite draining. And it was through my healing journey only recently that I was able to recognize and choose where I want to stand in that. And I'm sure other race and other gender probably, you know, have more or less similar experiences. But that's something that's coming up as I'm thinking about how being an Asian woman or a Korean woman growing up in Korea as a female have influenced some of the things that that I have done.
Yeah, I mean, that's really profound because these conditioning from your upbringing, especially from another maternal figure, woman figure in your family, almost like boxed your identity and who you should be, which is a submissive woman who's not allowed to speak up, who is almost inferior to a male in your family or your brother. And I look at you and the work that you do now, and you're totally on the opposite, right? You're speaking up, you're sharing your story, you're coaching, you're empowering others. So I'm really curious, when you moved to the US, how did your identity or your understanding of your role change?
Yeah, I actually don't think they changed immediately. And this is the kind of thing I think we can only make sense by looking backwards, because I was just living my life and I only knew the one version of my story, which is my story, really, intimately. And for a long time, the story that I believed in was that I don't belong. Not only I am quote unquote Asian woman, but also I am in the States. I'm a foreigner. I was born in Korea and I came here when I was, I went to high school in Canada and came to the States for college. So I was like 19, 20. So by then, and yes, I have lived here for almost 20 years, but still like there's an element of me that is foreign to, that I don't share with people who are born in the States. So how did that impact my identity? I think it somehow really allowed, in my younger years, it had me to be really adaptive to environments, to different social groups, so that I can feel belonging. I went to hanging out. I remember in college, I was part of a brown women's rowing team. And when I was hanging out with my rowers, I would be this one person, quite competitive and loving this sport. Whereas if I'm hanging out with my Korean girlfriends who are mostly from Korea, then we would talk about, I don't know, maybe cooking or getting dressed up for different things or dating. And then I would be hanging out with my economics. I was majoring in economics. I was hanging out with my economics nerds friends. Then we will all talk about like homework sets and internship, like being ambitious in our own career. I was doing that in my efforts to fit in. And in a way, I never felt that I was truly belonging anywhere. And it was only, again, like recently where that story, where I would then make myself feel lonely wherever I was because I don't belong anywhere. But that story, if I just change the perspective, it actually means I belong everywhere. And that the loneliness or sense of aloneness is just part of existential aspect, and that I don't have to associate that with the fact how I belong or what my identity is around different racial groups or different gender and so on.
Yeah, well, I think you just spoke to that, the perpetual foreigner kind of stereotype that the Asian American community experience here, in that, you know, I think even for people who were born in the States, like they also experience not fitting in. I'm curious how that experience propelled you to pursue kind of your life path early on in terms of whether it's the career path you chose or just kind of shaping your who you were becoming in that sense. I'm just really curious, like how that impacted you.
I think for a long time, I tried very hard to fit in. So first out of college was investment banking. And so a lot of my classmates went into the same field and I would dress like what a stereotypical investment banking analyst would look like. I would do the things what I believe this stereotypical investment banking analyst should be doing in terms of certain brands of bags that I carry, certain like coffee that they drink, even if it felt inauthentic. I thought that was just how it needs to be part of this. Fake it until you make it. But then it never felt right for a really long time. I think I was pretty good at that game, but I just never felt right. So at a certain point, I reached a place where I just said, like, fuck this. I am just going to be me. Like, I always knew all along that I was uniqueness to me, the way, not only because of my ethnic and racial background, but also because of my personal preferences, like what my sense of humor. I always knew that there was something different in me, and every one of us is unique. And instead of ignoring that uniqueness, how can I honor that uniqueness? I belong anyways, and I belong always. And I think it was that point when I gave myself permission to be different and to be unique, I was able to really give myself full permission to explore this professional path that looks very unconventional.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious what led up to that point, because it sounded like you had led this life of a false self, right? Like trying to fit in and pursuing path that looked good. And on paper, you had great resume, worked at really prestigious companies, had great career advances that seemed just respectful and successful on paper. So I'm really curious, like, what was that turning point? that gave you the courage to give yourself the permission to be unique in your own self?
So I want to mention, caveat this point, that there it's not just the one moment that something changes. I think about water. Yes, when we boil water, it's in a liquid form, but the temperature goes up, let's say from 25 Celsius, which is room temperature, to boiling temperature to 100 Celsius. And then when it becomes 100 Celsius, then it becomes that gas form. So yes, there's that inflection point, but in order to reach that inflection point, it has to boil and goes through temperature from room temperature to all the way to 99 degrees. I think my inflection point was probably during COVID, living in Panama. During the COVID, and especially living in Panama, it didn't happen overnight. And there were many of those rising temperature things, probably over a span of 5 years. Professionally, it seemed that I was unlocking the next level of success by working in a company that got acquired, and venture fund that allowed me to travel everywhere, meeting investors and founders with great ideas. But it didn't fulfill something deep in me. Something deep in me just intuitively knew that my work is not this. It's something more than this. But I didn't have the courage to find it. And then personally, I went through a really difficult breakup that led me to meditation back in 2014. Then I found out my mom had cancer in 2016, and she passed away about 8 months later in 2017. So that journey of seeing the process of dying invited me to think a lot about life. And at that point, I already had some tools around meditation, around coaching and therapy. So from that point, I realized, wow, I really want to be more committed by finding out what living means to me. So my journey has really begun from 2017, where I doubled down on exploring a number of healing modalities and became coach myself. But then it wasn't until COVID when boiling inflection happened, because I still had this fear of the wholeness, of the security and of the belonging that is still largely conditioned in me. But through a series of amazing events that happened that led me to buy one-way tickets to Panama in 2020 and living there in this community that I knew no one, and it was maybe about 100 people living in the beach who have a very different ways of life. For example, this woman who has two teenage daughters, and they're both homeschooled. And the first daughter, instead of sending her to, let's say, SAT prep so that she can go to good college, she would just have her sell vegan smoothies to guests who are coming to this beach town, because the daughter loves cooking. And the mom wanted the daughter to explore not only the cooking skills, but also get to talk to these people, learn about the world outside, as well as learn business skills just by having this vegan smoothie selling shack on the beach. Like that, I would have never seen in Korea or in the States. So seeing examples like that really allowed me, wow, what are the conditioned beliefs that I have in me that I am building my own prison? And enough of self-work at this point where I know that I can identify them and I can actually make my own free will choice if I stay to believe in those ideas or examine it and realize that this is an old belief that no longer can prison me. So the inflection point was when I decided I want to let go of all these ideas and make myself as clean as possible.
Yeah, I love kind of you walking through the journey, and I really love the kind of the water boiling analogy, because I can visualize that. And it sounded like there were these big moments in your life, started with the breakup and then the death of your mother, that propelled you on the healing journey, or maybe even the spiritual quest of like searching for what is the meaning of life. And you explored a variety of different sort of healing modalities. Like, I'm really curious how you navigated through that. Like, how did you, I guess, I find that the healing world so broad and there's so many different modalities and different ways of healing. And I'm really curious kind of like in those years leading up to 2020, before you made that pivotal decision, like how did you navigate your own healing journey?
I think until 2020, I had friends who have explored different types of things. And I had also practiced yoga and meditation a number of years by then. So a lot of my inquiry were coming from the modalities that was pretty well known: sound healing, breath work, different types of yoga, chanting, different types of meditation, transcendental to vipassana. And it was by as well as more of what the medical system offers, like therapy, as well as including like a psychedelic assisted therapy that is coming to really prove its efficacy, and just really exploring all those things that were within reach. And at a certain point, I realized, to your point, there are so many, and they all felt quite different from each other. Having explored a bunch of those, I realized they all speak about the same thing. And that's when I actually wrote what I call my healing map about 3 years ago, just putting this, creating a map of all the healing modalities that I have tried and see how they are really connected in terms of spirituality as well as healing.
Yeah. I'm curious if you can share that with the audience, like what is really the through line of all, out of all the healing modalities you've explored, and like, and kind of what was your takeaway from creating that map of healing?
Yeah, I think the big lesson from that, a couple of big lessons is, I personally believe that in order to heal, spirituality is critical. That there's something greater than I am that exists out there, and the connection with that. And different religions, different philosophers, different psychologists call this in different names. But at the end of the day, this is what I believe the universe, the light, God is. But that said, being spiritual doesn't mean you are healed. Because we hear about all this amazing, deep spiritual teachers who commit some stupid things. Like we hear about, for example, this like amazing Buddhist teacher doing some sexual harassment within the community. And I think that is because the way that we as a human being exist is, yes, we are spirit having this human experience, but also human that is spiritually connected. So even though you are so spiritually advanced, you have to do the work at the human level.
So what does that mean? Maybe if you can give an example.
For example, shadow work, understanding, because as a human, we all have a persona, which has this ego. Understand, for example, what is your relationship with power? What is your relationship with money or sex? Some of the things that through many years, people fight over and over. Like, what is your relationship with that? And what does it mean for you to live a life that does not do any harm? What's your ethics? So doing the level of work so that you have a really understanding of your ability to do harms based on relationships, your relationships with things like money, power, sex. Since you have an understanding of that, what I call darkness of being human, and I think we have so much, we are so much more empowered to do good in the world. That, even having that awareness around it and examining our beliefs around certain things that otherwise may be triggering us, at doing that work itself will loosen the grip of your own patterns, because all human, your own patterns on that egoic persona level, so that you can be more spiritually grounded.
So I guess if I understand correctly, like the through line that you interpreted from your own lived experience of healing from different modalities is the integration of the spiritual concepts and the learning into the humanly lived experience. And it's in that kind of maybe even like bringing together the shadow and the light and being in that paradox of the spiritual and the human self, like that's where healing is that
correct? Yeah, I think healing, a lot of it is what I call the wholeness of it. So how can we be more whole instead of being the separate selves?
Yeah, I think that's, I really resonate with that. And what does wholeness mean to you? I'm curious.
Wholeness to me is unconditional acceptance of what is. Meaning, I happen to have an Asian female bodied in this lifetime and have certain tendencies when it comes to my personalities. Have awareness of what they are, but not necessarily to cling on it and not necessarily judge any of those things that is present, because the moment that I judge and that I want to separate and put that in my shadow, in my own darkness, then I lose the part of it. And that creates all the subsequent whatever things that can happen. So my, in my way, and in doing so, I also lose my power, because darkness is so much energy and power as well. So for me, the wholeness is acknowledging and accepting everything as it is, with awareness, with kind awareness.
I love that. I love to kind of hear a little bit about your experience kind of dealing with your mother's death, because I imagine that there's a lot of darkness there. And a lot of people like myself who haven't had that experience of someone really close going through that death, like it can be frightening and scary. And so I'm curious how that experience transformed who you are or who you were to become who you are now.
Around my mom's death, So it was the death itself. And I think a lot of it actually is self-hatred. I hated myself for not being more caring and loving towards my mom, especially at the end of her illness when she had a severe case of dementia. It was incredibly difficult. That created, obviously, a lot of challenges for my family. And my dad was taking care of my mom. I had a younger brother, and we will also have arguments around it as well. And when all those things happened, I had a lot of self-hatred in me where why did I do those things that was not harmonious, that was not coming from a place of love? And that I was able to work through that through mindful self-compassion practices. So cultivating the experience of having such harsh self-hatred voice in my head actually became an invitation for me to cultivate self-kindness, self-forgiveness, as well as self-compassion. And of course, that self-love is a big source of resilience for me these days.
And I can really relate to that, like especially hearing you have done a lot of work to even be aware of all the inner critic and the inner voice that's kind of spewing out like that, the self-hatred. And it's a huge U-turn to then turn towards yourself with compassion and self-love. And I'm curious if that's kind of what led you to like pursue the Hoffman process and kind of become a coach. Like, I'm really curious, how did you, figure out like what exactly it is that you want to do based on your lived experiences? Because again, like this field is so wide, there's so many different ways you can serve. How did you come to the realization of doing what you're doing now?
One word is experimentation. Because through this journey, it became really clear to me that my purpose in this lifetime, what I give meaning to, is service, be of service of other people. That message was so clear through my meditation, but
Interesting.
I didn't
Like,
know how. Because there are so many different ways to be of service.
exactly. How did you know? I'm actually curious. Like, how did you know through your meditation that your purpose is to serve?
It sounds crazy, and it's literally the message that I received through meditation. And that's why I consider my personal mission statement to be meditate, play, and serve. It's because meditation opens, it's the time for me so that I can really be in touch with this deeper consciousness. And the deeper consciousness is so innately wise. From there, once I am quiet enough to listen to that deep inner knowing, then all these ideas come out. So not only that, that's where I got this, my purpose of lifetime, as well as my mission statement. I published a book in Korea last winter, about a year ago, and that idea was coming from meditation as well. Which is why I have been certified to teach mindful meditation, and I continue to come back to meditation as my primary practice. Because the answer is always and already within all of us. We just need to listen. We just need to listen without the messages from fear, from the conditioned self of how life should be. We have this vast openness, kind attention, then these messages, in my experience, are likely come up.
Yeah, so that's so beautiful. So you got this message that you're meant to serve, like, and you, I imagine you had this like full body experience that that's what's resonating with you. How did you figure out, how to serve?
Thank you for asking that question. And experiment meaning, so that happened in my mid 30s. And by then I have been working in the business sector for 10 plus years. And I thought about, there's this model called Ikigai, which is, yes. So Ikigai is this Japanese word meaning the purpose of life. And it's four circles where what you like and what you're good at, what the society needs, as well as what you can get paid for. So I used different models like Ikigai, as well as I thought about Lean Startup Model by Eric Ries. You know, I come from business background working with, I would apply all these models in my life to figure out what is the, that I know what the purpose is, then how to execute the purpose through my lifetime. So I was experimenting with different ideas, and I knew just following the Ikigai model, I thought about going to medical school. I thought about maybe becoming a therapist, traditional way of servicing. And what became clear to me was I want to live a life of yes and. Meaning, I have this amazing work experience, and whatever I do, I want to build something on top of it instead of building from myself from the scratch. So that scratched the idea of going back to medical school and being a doctor. And that's where the idea of coach became really attractive to me. I had heard of a bit of executive coach through my friends who were working at startups. And I had met a couple of coaches and I had conversations with them. And I realized, wow, this is actually something, not only I bring in my soft skills of quote unquote holding space and guiding them, but also bring my experience as a business woman. And perhaps there is more resonance because of that similarity or common experience that I share with my clients.
Well, I'm curious, kind of taking this one step further, again, in the coaching realm, right? There's so many different ways you can coach people navigating through different scenarios. How did you kind of figure out, like, what's your unique gift? And what do you want to, and in the way that you're coaching that's in alignment with your purpose?
Yeah, I think my biggest gift is my connection with the spirit. And from there, I have received many feedback about how I hold space with my clients. That said, I want to caveat that I am keenly aware that coach is just an identity. It's just one hat that I wear. But what I do in terms of servicing the common humanity and the world is rooted on my unique gift, which is, I believe, is my connection with spirit and ability to be present there and hold space. And that means, and my life is always experimenting. Coaching identity and coaching experimentation, who knows, maybe this will end next year. And then whatever that I have experienced may open door to something new that I don't know. I'm open to that possibility as well. So whatever that I have manifested right now, I'm only holding that loosely.
Yeah, and I love it because it speaks so well to the theme of evolve, because you are accepting the fact that you're going to be evolving in your roles and your identity, and your this is just one step in your own evolutionary journey. Well, I'm curious. So like recently you started teaching at Hoffman, which is really exciting. How did you stumble upon that line of teaching, and what made you decide that, you know, you want to become a facilitator and a teacher with the Hoffman School?
Yes. So I have heard of Hoffman because some of people that I know within tech, this is back in 2018, 2017, have done Hoffman, and I've heard of it. And I tried it. This is my exploration, where I was trying I was attending every workshop that I can find, because I was curious. The reason that I chose to become a Hoffman teacher is because Hoffman is a psycho-spiritual workshop. Yes, it's rooted in neuroscience research and psychology, as well as deeply spiritual experience. And Hoffman is accessible to everyone. Meaning, if you are a investment banking analyst, 20-something investment banking analyst in New York City, and wants to improve your life, you can do Hoffman. If you are 60-something years old, billionaire, who has become a philanthropist and wants to find more self-love, it's accessible to you. If you are a Buddhist monk who's been practicing spirituality for your entire life, but now want to come to work on your human level suffering, then you can come to Hoffman. The way that it's designed is so accessible to anyone that they don't have to have any connection with spirit. They will come and can experience the power of this program.
So what you're saying is that by accessible, less so referring to like the resources standpoint, but it's more like people can access their connection to spirit through this process.
Yes. Because the reason that I say that is, for some of, especially the deeper I go into the spiritual domains, let's say even like meditation. Meditation is a practice that has been so widely spread these days, and it comes from Buddhism. As soon as you step into a little bit of depth in meditation, then it's very quickly, then you will hear about Buddha, you will hear about maybe Pali canon words, which is where a lot of this Buddha's words were written in that language, the precepts, and so all these concepts that you need to know to operate within that realm. Whereas in Hoffman, you don't have to know anything. It doesn't require any level of, or any perspective, or any preparation. You just need the openness and commitment, and then you can come and you get to experience the deep spirituality, that feeling that it offers.
Yeah, I love that explanation, because it again goes back to like the through line that you discover from all the different healing modality, which is that in the end, like, it's about connection to the spiritual self, and then bring that back to the human experience. And it sounded like for you, you found the Hoffman process to be like the shortest path there. And that's why you want to be a facilitator to help others kind of find their shortest path to healing and
And it also provides with tools that we can use every day.
What are some examples?
At Hoffman, we explain the human with this model of quadrinity, where in order to explain the wholeness of a human, there are four aspects. There's body, there's intellect, this thinking aspect of us, there's emotional self, the feeling aspect of us, as well as there's a spiritual self, which is this deep, wise, loving, the best version of yourself that is within you. And we have, for example, a practice called Quadrini Check-In, where you get to check in with all four aspects to really listen for what it's needing today or any messages that they have. And by doing this, you get to really be present and authentic with who you are.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful process of embracing, like you were talking about wholeness. And it sounds like that process really enable one to explore the parts of themselves and then bring it back to their wholeness.
Exactly. And when I said Hoffman is so accessible to people, even the fact that there's this concept of self, and Buddhism refers to maybe small self, or, but Hoffman just say, well, in human, there are four aspects: body, intellect, feeling, and your spiritual self. And this is spiritual self. So it's just so much easier to understand. So from coming from that intellectually accessible way, people are not held against it, and they can be curious, and we give them very concrete and easy tools that they can actually incorporate this in their daily practice.
Well, that sounds super exciting, and I'm definitely gonna ask you for the link later to add in the show notes if people want to specifically work with you through the process. For the last part of the conversation, I know you mentioned a little bit earlier, and I love to dig a little bit into navigating uncertainty and finding an inner sense of security. So you took a pretty courageous decision to leave your corporate job. And if I remember from your story that you became nomadic for a good portion of time. And in fact, I think you still are. And I'm really curious, like, especially for people who want to pursue their dreams or who know that they have a purpose to serve, but they don't know what that road looks like. Like, how can one navigate the uncertainty and overcome these fears about, you know, insecurity or even financial obligations, et cetera? I think that's a big topic for a lot of people. It's like they want to do that, but held back by the fear.
I believe that if you choose to serve love and choose to serve the awareness and choose your own unique path, the door keeps opening. And you have to be very honest with yourself if you are choosing this place from love or place from fear, whatever the decision is.
Mm-hmm. How would someone know, or in your own experience, how did you differentiate the two?
I listen to my body. When I am making a decision from place of love, I feel warmth. I feel expansive. I feel my shoulders being relaxed, and I feel perhaps this lightness. But if I choose from place of fear, just imagining that, I can sense my voice becoming maybe more heavy and my body being contracted and my tummy just feels like I'm not even digesting food properly. Our body has so much wisdom. And I pause that whenever something is asking for more of my attention, then I turn my attention to my body and ask, how does my body feel in this moment?
I guess my question for you is, when the things, so, you know, working on this path of service and exploring these different roles that you're meant to play, like when things haven't materialized, right? Like, for example, if you haven't gotten a clear signal of like which path you're supposed to pursue, or, you know, there's not a clear path on how the work that you're meant to do will support you financially. Like, how did you navigate through that? Like, how did you find the faith to continue to move forward in that direction, even if it hasn't materialized in the physical plane?
I think that's when I come back to my connection with the spirit. Because I believe that if something's meant to happen, it'll happen. And sometimes patience is perhaps a virtue that I need to learn. And not everything has to happen at this moment, right now. I just don't know yet, and I can only connect the dots by looking backwards. So in those moments, I choose what I can do with my best intention.
Yeah. Were there times, I'm curious, were there times you almost gave up, or you were able to, like, since you left your corporate role, you were able to kind of move forward in what you're doing or what you're exploring?
There were times that I had seriously considered if I should find a job that was more lucrative, because I literally had maybe like $5,000 in my bank account, as my like in my cash, and market was not great to like liquidate some of the things that I had. And I also laughed at myself, because those are the moments that had me to recommit to the path that I am on right now. Because knowing what I know now, I can never go back to the old Erin. Butterfly cannot be a cocoon again. But whatever happens, I know that it's what my job is, just be with whatever that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You speak with so much conviction and presence and power. I could really feel that. And I think before we let you go, I really want to know, what are some practices you do on a daily basis that help you stay spiritually grounded?
I ask myself the question of if this is coming from love or fear, pretty much all the time when I'm making decision. And obviously meditation helps. But then the way that I meditate is not necessarily, let's have 10-minute alarm and sit still for 10 minutes. It's really about, because the whole point of meditation is to train my mind so that it can be in touch with that extraordinary consciousness. It's not about just sitting silently with concentration. So the way that I bring in meditation in my day-to-day life is, how can I be in touch with the level of presence the moment that I know that I will be annoyed, that the human Erin will be annoyed? For example, I have to wait in line to get coffee at 8 a.m. at Starbucks, or I have to do these dishes that's full of grease from cooking. I know that the conditioned being doesn't like those situations. Then I'm aware of that. Then I bring myself, wow, then this is a great moment to practice meditation.
Yeah, I love that. It really sounds like you're cultivating almost this like self-mastery through your daily practice. And I love also how you frame that the meditation is actually training yourself to see your human self while being able to connect to the spiritual self and holding that. And that's the practice. I'm getting it now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, well, this is really, I love this conversation, and the entire time I could really feel your presence very strongly in this conversation. So I'm curious now, who are you in the process of becoming into this year?
Yeah. I don't know. That's the answer of who I'm going to be, but my intention of my where I want to spend my attention is mastering my craft as a coach, as a writer, as a Hoffman teacher, because I am frankly still very much of a beginner in all those practices. And I am also writing a fiction, which is an adult fairy tale.
So exciting.
Yes, so that's my, I think that's probably my first passion. So that's who am I becoming? I am becoming a storyteller.
Oh my God, I love that. I've been gravitating really towards a lot of fiction writers. Also, like, I brought them onto the podcast because it's just so fascinating, kind of materializing the world that you have imagined into like a story, and the intricacies you can dive into around like human nature and human dynamics and just different values. Like, it's fascinating. So I'm so excited for you.
Oh, thank you. I would love to get introduced to a couple if that's possible.
Yes, definitely. So where can people find all of the great work you're doing? What's the best place to go to? And where can they learn more?
They can all come visit my website, which is erinlim.com, AerinLim.com. And I'm pretty active on social media, on Instagram as well. So they can find me in any of those too.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today, and thank you for sharing your story.
Of course. Thank you as well.